Smith Island, one crew. That was delayed 2 days because of weather, and then a gray whale washed up on shore, and they had to get that refloated and towed out to sea. The actual testing began yesterday morning. Preliminary DEC field reports say that it was less than successful in that there was a plume which escaped and went out to open sea. Water samples were taken of that plume.
You witching hour? And
we'll see if the Admiral's... We're waiting for State On-Scene Coordinator DEC Steve Provant to get here. As I was about to tell you, he was on site today at the Corexit testing site, so he should be able to give us more of an update than just what I've been able to glean through the daily report and from talking to people over there. Other issues which are ongoing, the incinerators. The incinerator at Vicota Bay is, they've granted a special hearing to the people of Port Lions, and that will be in about 2 weeks, which might be a mute issue by that time, because I think they have to move the incinerators by the end of next week just because of weather. The incinerator here in Herring Bay, we are expecting a recommendation from DEC about the permit. That should be coming tomorrow. That was the earliest date that we were told by DEC that the permit would be forthcoming. Lots of people crowded into the room. I think we're back up to the 70 mark again, and we're bringing in extra chairs and passing them around as people try to get settled. Bit of RF in my ears tonight. I hope that's not going to make it too difficult for you to understand what's going on, but I train these guys pretty well. They all stay pretty close to the microphones. Admiral's had a 3-week rest, and it looks like he's ready to get serious and back in business again here. Certainly ready to start this meeting. Just waiting for the last of the players. Passing out reports, trying to juggle for places to sit. I guess the people at the head table are lucky they have their chairs already. And most of us.
Long 2 weeks, I don't know anything. I had a complete wash. It's all new. Bill, do you want to start off?
Here we go.
Is this working?
Sounds good.
I'm Bill Rainey, Exxon's operations manager. Let me cover the highlights for last week's activities. I'll begin with safety. We did have a total of 24 injuries over the week. None of those were Exxon. 19 were lost time contractor injuries and 5 medical treatment injuries. In terms of major equipment deployment, a total of 1,209 vessels. That's down about 100 from last week. 38 skimmers, 84 aircraft, and 313,000 feet of boom deployed, with another 216,000 feet remaining available. Shoreline progress was a total of 43.2 miles in the Sound, 24.5 in Gulf of Alaska, for a total of 67.7 miles. A reasonably good week considering the weather we had. A total of 1,040 miles of progress to date. There's 48.5 miles to go. 34 of that in the Sound, the rest in the Gulf of Alaska. Landing craft, 52. 22 barges. And 40 berthing vessels. That's down about 15 from last week. We recovered 433 barrels of oil, cleaned almost 22,000 feet of boom, over 5,000 of that yesterday, and we still have a major commitment of 9,900 people working on this project, and that's down Oh, about 300 from last week. A small percentage. Next, we're going to go over the accomplishments in the different work areas. And at the very end, Admiral Robbins, we'd also like to give a verbal report on how we're doing with our transition team on decommissioning of major equipment over last week. We'll begin with Prince William Sound. Wayne Voskamp will cover Prince William Sound accomplishments. I'll mention a few of the highlights while he's coming to the mic. As I said, we did have good progress over the last week with 34 miles remaining in Prince William Sound. We received Coast Guard approval for demobilization on 36 shoreline segments. We have begun redeployment of Task Force 3. Its work is completed in the Perry Island area. So those vessels and equipment are either being decommissioned, moved to the transition team, or being redeployed to other task forces, and most of it is the latter. We have completed 26 miles of bioremediation to date, and the application equipment capacity we've more than tripled over the last week, so we expect to be making even more rapid progress over the next week. And along with that, we started up a second bioremediation team in the Bay of Isles this week. And as you're aware, we have a Corexit test going on Smith Island, and that began yesterday and also was conducted today. I'll let Wayne cover the near-term focus. One that I will emphasize also is we're continuing to get very frequent weather updates and to make sure that we've got all of our people and equipment deployed and have a plan for safe harbor and safe protection of people in case of rough weather. The weather was tough last week, especially in some areas of Prince William Sound. We had one berthing vessel that had 60 knot winds and 8 to 10 foot seas right off Smith Island. Had trouble maintaining anchorage, and we moved that to Northwest Bay. So some of the wintertime weather that we've been talking about is already starting to impact us in terms of people's safety. We're being especially conscious of that and taking every measure we know how to make sure the rest of the work that we have remaining is conducted safely as possible. So with that, Wayne.
I'm Wayne Voskamp with Exxon. I'm the coordinator for Task Forces 1, 2, and 6. I'll cover the highlights of those task forces, but also task forces 3, 4, and 5 for Scott Nauman. Scott's been involved in the Corexit test today. His flight back in has been delayed due to fog. That's fog here, not fog in the sound. I understand it's a pretty nice day out there. Starting moving north to south in Prince William Sound, as Bill mentioned, Task Force 3 has been working the Perry Island and also Cull Ross Island area. At this point in time, they are essentially complete with that work in the mode of doing some debris pickup and general cleanup in their operating area. And they are in the beginning phases of demobilization. Moving on to Task Force 5, that task force has continued to work Smith Island in the last few days and will continue that area. As Bill mentioned, there was a Corexit test conducted at one site yesterday and at another site today. The test has been successfully completed from an operational viewpoint. It was only completed a few hours ago. And evaluations of the magnitudes of the benefit of Corexit will occur in the next few days, and we'll be in a position to give a more detailed report at next week's meeting. Moving to Task Force 4 has continued to operate in the overall Upper Passage area. Work is nearing completion in that area with about three segments or so of current work activity. Given that Task Force 4 has broken out a piece of that unit to assist Task Force 2 in the Point Helen area, And the USS Duluth and the Coastal Star have just recently relocated down here to Mummy Bay. And workers from Task Force 4 will begin this week working the Point Helen area north, with Task Force 2 also assisting the area from Hogan Bay to Point Helen, which is heavily oiled. Will be split up among Task Force 4 and 2, and they're both beginning to work that this week. Task Force 2, which has been headquartered out of Snug Harbor for some time, continues work in that area. Within Snug Harbor, they have completed work in all of that harbor with the exception of two segments. Also working northward on the east coast of Knight Island, all of that area has been cleaned by Task Force 2 with the exception of one small segment close to Bay of Isles. And they should be able to pick that up in a day or two in a good weather situation. Moving on down to Task Force 1 is assigned the southern sector and will be assigned the southern sector for the balance of the work. They had been working the north shore of Latouche on LA-15 and also the north shore of Evans Island from Evans Point to the east. That work was recently completed and they redeployed into the Bainbridge Passage. So you'll find the Bering Trader currently anchored in the Bainbridge Passage. They're working three segments that need work in that area. From there, they'll move to the eastern shore of Elrington and the western shore of Latouche to pick up some work in that area, plus a little bit here in Mummy Bay itself. There is some work required there, and Task Force 1 will do that work. Moving to Task Force 6, which had been assigned the Shami Bay, Main Bay, Chenega Island area, work in that area has been completed. They've also been working in Herring Bay. The work in Herring Bay is essentially complete, with two segments needing inspection at this point. So Task Force 6 at this point is also in the beginning phases of demobilization. We do plan to break off a piece of Task Force 6, probably housed on the FOSS 280, relocated down to Mummy Bay. And this will be a small group with an Omni and a couple of landing craft, pretty much what I might call a loose ends cleanup team. For some of those loose ends that come up throughout the Sound that aren't currently assigned to other task forces. For example, there's a couple of islands on the southwest side of Knight that we need to work, Pass Island and a Guliac Island. Also, there is a couple of segments on Montague, on the south end of Montague around Hanning Bay, that'll need some work, and also some on the north side of Montague and probably a spot or two on Green Island. So this offshoot of Task Force 6 will be the loose ends cleanup team, and it'll help ensure that we get to all the shoreline we need to get to before the winterization this year. That's my summary of the Prince William Sound situation. Any questions?
Yes, I was under the impression that you were going to be back to Bay.
There's a area in Sleepy Bay that we intend to go back to wash and to also bioremediate. And it's somewhere around a 800 or 1,000 yard section within that area that's more oiled than the other. And that could be done either by Task Force 1 or this special loose ends cleanup team out of Task Force 6. We really haven't made a final decision on that. Other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ronnie Park will now discuss Gulf of Alaska progress last week.
I'm Ronnie Park, handling the shoreline cleanup operations in the Gulf of Alaska, which includes all areas outside Prince William Sound. And the map on my far right there shows the areas. We have operations headquartered in Homer, Seward, and Kodiak. This past week, we had a total of 69 miles of shoreline treated, which included 24.5 miles of new treatment and and about 44 miles of retreatment. Most of the deaths was in the Kodiak area. Also, during the past week, 24 and a half miles were approved by the Coast Guard for demobilization, and this brings us to a total of 61% of the treated shoreline that's been approved for demob. That really reflects the amount that we've received paperwork on. The inspection teams are out working, and there is some lag in the paperwork for it. We've really made more progress in that. Our manpower on the shoreline in the Gulf of Alaska is currently 550, and our total manpower is 1,350. We have 423 vessels in service and 49 aircraft. Looking first at Kodiak in the southern part of the Gulf of Alaska area, we have 374 OSRTs working there. To date, we've completed 98% of the planned shoreline treatment, with 14 miles remaining to be treated at this time. We have current operations at 19 locations shown on the map. This week, we've continued intense efforts to catch up with the Coast Guard shoreline segment demobilization activities, with over 373 miles approved through today, and they've now added the fifth team down there to further accelerate that activity. The four locations on the western side of the Shillikoff Strait show where we have, we've organized 13 teams over there into four task forces that are working in that area. And on the Kodiak Archipelago, we have six teams and our village crews working, in addition to our regular cleanup teams there. We did complete village crew demobilizations for Old Harbor, Akiak, and Uzinki, and Port Lines, and this phase down is continuing for the other village crews as they complete their work. We have hot water washing operations completed at Paravalny Island on the north end of the Kodiak Archipelago, and that now has moved down to Shuyak Harbor. For the near-term activities, we're continuing close monitoring of the weather and placement of crews, particularly across the Shillikoff Strait, where we're in really exposed areas over there, and we're trying to work in the exposed areas when the weather's good and still be productive in the more sheltered areas when we have to run for weather. Of course, we're continuing to support the Coast Guard segment demobilization approval effort and trying to maximize our efficiency planning treatments to take maximum advantage of the weather. We have been affected quite a bit by weather this week in Kodiak. Hot water washing operations are currently underway at Shuyak Island. In the Homer area, which is in the center there, we are rapidly nearing completion of our planned work there. We're currently 99% complete with the planned shoreline treatment, with only 1/10 of a mile remaining to be treated. We have 40 OSRTs working in Homer. We're currently operating at four locations. We're washing at Windy Bay right now, and when we complete there, we'll be moving to Chugach Bay. We also have log burning going on in a couple of locations in Homer. Accomplishments this week, we had 26 additional segments submitted for approval. Completed hot water wash and log burning in Tonsina Bay. Completed hot water washing in Port Dick, segment PD-10. We received Coast Guard demob approval for five segments, and this brings us to 51 out of 83 segments are now approved. As far as near-term activities, we'll be completing our washing at Windy Bay and then moving to Chugach with two LCVs and two hot water washing teams. We're continuing to work with the Coast Guard on demobilizing beach segments. We'll be going back to Elizabeth Island to clean some re-impact or some impact that was not previously identified and burning remaining logs there. In Seward this week, we've really been heavily impacted by weather. Today's the first day we've flown since this Tuesday of last week, and we also had real heavy seas in there. We're working down in the Pie Islands and area and Resurrection Bay. We have working at Pony Cove, Ragged Island, Yalak Glacier Beach, and Outer Islands. And it's really had a lot of weather downtime this week, and the lack of flying has prevented us from really getting out and seeing the operations with both Exxon, Coast Guard, and agency personnel not been able to fly. We've completed Type B hot water washing on Rabbit Island, and was initiated it at Pie Island, Cove, Rabbit Island, Ragged Island, and Outer Island this week. We moved a completed log burning late last week at Hoof Point and moved to Yalik Glacier Beach and started up log burning operations there. We completed all the bioremediation work in Seward also. We submitted 13 segments for demobilization approval by the Coast Guard and received Coast Guard approval to demobilize the Quartz Bay. In the near term issues, your handout should read, we begin Type A rather than Type B treatment at Yalik Bay, Roaring Cove, and Pie Islands. We plan to continue our Type B hot water washing at Pony Cove, Pie Island, Ragged, Outer, and we'll move to new segments at Burden Cove, Black Bay, and Natoa Island, weather permitting, this week. We should also wrap up our log burning at Yalik Glacier Beach. We're continuing to update our Seward work plan to work in those more exposed areas when weather permits and save the more sheltered areas so that we can still be productive when we have severe weather. I'm really pleased with the progress that our teams have made this week in spite of the adverse weather conditions, and continue to put the highest priority on working without getting anybody seriously hurt. We'll be continuing to work with the Coast Guard hopefully this week to be able to fly and move more around in the Seward area. Are there any questions?
I see Scott has returned from Smith Island. Scott, would you like to make any comments on the Corexit test?
I'm Scott Nauman, Task Force Coordinator for Task Forces 3, 4, and 5. Appreciate Wayne handling my portion of the program. We have been conducting Corexit tests at Smith Island on today and yesterday. Was present for the entire day yesterday, got in at the end of today's activities, sat through the debriefing in each case with Coast Guard representative, ADEC representative, as well as key members of the crew that worked the test. Just quick observations, and this is kind of the consensus of those 2 days worth of debriefings. A couple things of note, both tests were conducted in a rain. Today's rain a little bit harder than yesterday's. Sea conditions not ideal, but given those conditions, I think the crews did an excellent job in terms of conducting the test. Yesterday and today, similar results. I think the general consensus was that today's results were superior to yesterday's. That may be influenced partly by the weather. Overflight that I made today within the primary boom of the location on Smith 6, heavy dark brown oil collection. Snare boom, which we're using as the primary method for oil recovery, was black with oil. Again, it was the consensus of everyone there. We captured more today than yesterday, and that was directly a function of the beach we were working. One of the things we're trying to find is the oiliest possible beach. If there was a negative critique, it was that we're running out of heavily, heavily oiled beach on Smith, which is bad news for the test, good news overall. Containment today was excellent from the air. There was no observable escape out of the secondary boom. The vast majority of the oil was contained within the primary. Some within the secondary, but that was caught by the absorbent that they added to the secondary. We had similar results yesterday. There was observed sheen yesterday outside of the secondary. Commander Ryder and myself, as well as the ADC representative, took a ride in Zodiac, looked at the locations up and down Smith, concluded that largely what we were seeing was just the wash off from the heavy seas that we'd had the day before. Those were not apparent today. I guess a couple other observations I'd make. I've heard some, in fact I heard on the radio as I was coming in about a plume. We had a plume that was reported in the original corrected test, which I saw, sat through yesterday and today, and will say categorically, based on my observations, there was no escape of a plume from either of these sites. Certainly our overflights didn't support that, and I think our debriefing does. So those preliminary reports may have been based on incomplete evidence. So plan to go again tomorrow, hoping for good weather. I think the crews were upbeat today about the results they saw. We recovered almost 100 bags of oil absorbent material, heavily covered with oil. We'll be moving east or west tomorrow to a new location, again, heavily oiled beach. We worked with ADEC and Coast Guard to pick out a site, so we'll give it a shot again tomorrow, but pretty pleased with the results, particularly today's results. Any questions on the Corexit test? Thank you.
Rob Dragnick will now cover our Waste Management Environmental Report.
Good evening. I'm Rob Dragnick out of our Waste Management Group. Over the past week, we disposed of about 1,400 tons of oily solid waste, bringing our total disposal to date of over 20,000 tons. We look at that as somewhat of a milestone, and certainly getting us long ways down the road towards completing our goals there. With regards to the offshore incinerator barges, the AET barge remains on location in Vicota Bay and Kodiak Island. We expect to complete the installation of the new refractory lining that I mentioned to you last week sometime tonight. Unfortunately, during the further investigations and inspections this week, we discovered that the secondary combustion chamber refractory lining also had failed. We're planning to do a complete relining of that. The materials are scheduled to be on location tomorrow for that activity. If all goes well and weather cooperates and the materials do arrive, we would expect to complete that lining process next Sunday. No further delays or unforeseen problems, we'd expect to be in a position then to start up and begin waste incineration Sunday night or Monday of next week. During the past week, we have been, actually the past several weeks, evaluating alternative locations for the AET incinerator barge. Although a number of suitable locations have been identified around Dvognak Island, these sites are all within the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. Consultations with the refuge personnel indicate that it will take a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks to obtain a special use permit to locate an incinerator there. Given the amount of operating time we have left, we see that that's not a feasible alternative to pursue, and so we're not giving the refuge sites any further consideration. There is one site that has not yet been ruled out, either due to earlier ADEC investigations or work that we've done, and that is Raspberry Strait. Appears to be an operationally acceptable site. We can locate it just outside of the refuge in the strait. We're currently preparing a request to ADEC to approve that site as a contingency or a contingent alternative site. We have looked at the possibility of moving the barge while we're making the repairs, and that is not feasible. Consequently, to move the barge would take approximately 3 days' time. That's a significant amount of the remaining operating time that we have left. Consequently, we have not made any commitment and don't have any firm plans to move it at this time if the alternative site is approved. The Sealy incinerator barge is on location in Herring Bay and is ready to start up. As I mentioned to you last week, we are installing a second auxiliary burner in order to allow it to meet the minimum operating temperatures contained in the final permit for the unit. That burner installation was completed about 1 week ago. We're still waiting on the permit modification to allow us to use that second burner. Consequently, the unit has not started up yet. Latest information we have is that we'll probably see that permit modification being approved tomorrow. We'd hope then to be in a position to fire both units if they seem to be operating satisfactorily, perhaps tomorrow night, to actually start incinerating waste material. At this point, all of the waste in the Prince William Sound being generated is being diverted to Seward for packaging and disposal through the chemical waste management facility there. We're doing that to allow us to continue to ship waste out of the Dayville Road storage site to the Anchorage chemical waste management facility, thereby continuing to work off the stockpile that we have on Dayville Road. At this point, we're down to about 25% of the amount that we did have just a few weeks ago at that site, so we feel good about the progress there. On the oily liquid side of the business, we're in the process of completing installation of the wash water treating system on the Hanalei barge, currently identifying the vessels that we needed to transport and store the cleaned wash water. We plan to take that water to the City of Valdez sewage treatment plant once it's been treated. We're also storing some partially treated wash water from the Dayville Road operations at the Weaver Dock. We're pending some further treatment. Once we treat that satisfactorily, that will then also go to the sewage treatment plant. Currently making plans to send the barge 251 to Seattle with a load of skimmed oil and emulsified water with that. In the process now of doing the necessary calibration and sampling to obtain the necessary clearance before we can ship that out of state here. On the sanitary side, we're preparing a decommissioning plan for the aerated treatment lagoon barge, and we have received the final EPA permit for that barge. Are there any questions I might answer for you? Thank you.
Okay, with all of our shoreline cleanup activity, we also have a tremendous amount of activity transitioning into our winter program. Henry Hupp will give the status of that.
Thank you, Bill. I'm Henry. Like the shoreline operations,
I'm Bob Canone. I'm sitting in today for Steve Provant. DEC began a series of diving surveys to visually assess nearshore impacts from treatment activities. Hopefully, from this, recommendations will come out for future treatment activities. Relative to the Corexit test, I do not have an updated report from our observers out there. Two additional sites were added to the list of sites that were previously approved for the burning of oiled logs. These sites are Bootlegger Cove and Elizabeth Island, both in the Homer area. And that actually concludes our report today. Any questions?
Yeah. This is Bill Rainey again. You note in your highlights shoreline reassessments needed before fall in several segments. Maybe you could help me on where you're coming from on some of those. I know that a list of 19 segments in Prince William Sound was submitted to the ISCC yesterday, and it's the same list, I think, of 19 segments that was in your prior letter to Admiral Cangolini. On the original submission, work was underway on some of those, and it was planned on the rest of them, as we covered last week. But if you look at the status as of this morning, work has either been completed or is underway on 18 of the 19 segments. In fact, 13 of them have been signed off of demobilization by the Coast Guard. The one remaining segment that you highlighted is on Point Helen, which, as we said, we're beginning to work now. All 19 of those also have been approved for bioremediation. Treatment's been completed on five of those for bioremediation, initiated on three more, and we plan to do it on all of them. So I think what you're playing back to us is our plans for, you know, completion of the work. And if it's kind of asking, are you going to do what you said you were going to do, the answer is yes, safety and weather allowing. And so far, we've, you know, knocked off most of these 19 segments that you highlighted. You want to respond to that? I had a couple of other different things. Okay. On the Corexit test, you did note the gray whale, which appeared on Smith Island, apparently from Hinchinbrook. And said the Coast Guard towed it 15 miles out to sea. I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but since Sharon Severson from Exxon is sitting in the audience and worked on arranging for the whale to be towed off for a good part of the day yesterday at the request of the Coast Guard because they were tied up elsewhere, it was Exxon that towed off the whale. Didn't have anything to do with the oil spill, but we're glad to help out when we can. I just wanted to give Sharon due credit. Since she was here, I knew she'd fuss at me if I didn't say that. Just one other one, Bob. You mentioned an area you'd like to take another look at. It's Seward, and that's fine. One I need some help from you on is in Homer. We've got 14 of the segments, 14, I think, of a total of 29 segments that are currently in Coast Guard hands for evaluation of demobilization approval. And I think on those 14, it needs to be a joint ADEC Coast Guard survey as opposed to Coast Guard and other agencies that are going to be involved in some of them. At any rate, what I'm hearing is that in Homer, ADEC requirement is that in order to visit the site for demobilization with the Coast Guard, we have to have the combination of course, safe weather and negative tides. There's an excellent chance that that may not, those two things may not coincide with daylight in a month. And as you know, we're running out of time with the existing crews on completion of any remaining work. So I need some help from you on getting rapid assessment on whether or not any further work is required on the areas where we think we're complete so that we can get that done before the weather stops all the work except for, you know, what we can do during the winter.
Bill, I had a report today that the, over the next 5 days, they will have those negative tides. And if the weather cooperates, they should be able to look at them. Isn't that correct?
Yes, sir. I'm just worried about the weather.
Yeah,
if it doesn't cooperate, then by the time we get word that additional work is remaining, there will be no more people there to do the work except for those on the winter vessels.
I understand, and all we'll do is ask NOAA to improve the weather.
Not to belabor the point, sir, but my understanding is the requirement of a negative tide for inspection is unique to the Homer area, and I don't understand it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I do either, and I didn't question that today. I'll see if I can find out.
I think we ought to have them inspected tomorrow if the weather allows, just my personal opinion.
Well, tomorrow they have the negative tide, so it ought to be all right.
Great. All of them.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
You weren't going to comment on his first question.
Yeah, I can get with you on more specific information tomorrow on some of these things that you want to discuss.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Coast Guard. Yes.
I think the one thing that they're talking about the segments that we submitted for DEC is that there's a real concern with subsurface oil, and some of that is still coming up, and I think those are the ones that they're really looking to readdress, and they possibly look at those for reassessment, because we're very concerned over the winter this could be again a source of contamination that's not going to be able to be controlled. We'd like to have them looked at before the winter transition takes place.
Do you also have a recommended treatment methodology of that that's been approved by the Coast Guard?
I think we keep coming up with the same. I'm just going with John Bauer's talk about the letter he sent too, which was the fact we might be able to use, again, that water injection system, which I know that goes back and forth, but it was said to be too labor-intensive to try, and we would still like to see possibly a test to see if it would work. Our input from our field monitor said at the time it was tested, it did work fairly well.
I consider that a dead issue. We covered Exxon's objections to it, but the reason I consider it a dead issue is the Federal Unseen Coordinator wrote a letter last week addressing that and said the technique was not effective and would not be used this season of cleanup. So I understand the concern that you're expressing. I don't understand the action plan you suggest.
Well, I think the action plan is we'd like to have these reassessed and at least see if there's any possibility of further treatment in those areas where we might be able to. And you now just said that you are going to have this loose end task force out there, not task force, but at least a group that could address these, and possibly they might be able to go back to some of these areas and do some additional treatment.
Yes, sir. I would like to point out that the treatment plan is to hot water wash with or without Corexit, where Corexit is allowed, to follow that with bioremediation. Once bioremediation is applied, then there is no more treatment required. And bioremediation, if other treatment continues, of course you wash off the fertilizer and remove the effectiveness of the bioremediation. So until the Coast Guard advises us that additional work is required, my position is no additional work is required.
I think we obviously have to look at some of those beaches, and if we find that they're being re-oiled from beneath or from somewhere else, and there is treatment that's available to apply before the end of the season, we'll have to find a way of doing it.
I don't disagree with that, Admiral. It would be worthwhile to take a look at Green Island and see what bioremediation has done there for re-oiling.
Yeah, we're still in an area of experimentation with bioremediation. It'll be very interesting to see what happens, and I will be the first one to admit that we can't assure, because a beach has been treated 1, 2, 3, or 4 times, that we're not going to get re-oiling from down below. We hope that each time the treatment goes on, that we minimize that. But there are going to be some places that we need to re-examine and decide exactly what we're going to do with them. In some cases, we're going to have to say we're going to live with it through the winter. In other places, where maybe there is something we can do, and we'll try to do it.
Well, I think the main reason this was brought up was because we're especially concerned about those areas that could have sensitive resources that could be jeopardized, and I think that's all we're asking to do with this letter
went
to the ISCC.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all.
Good evening. I'm Dave Zawadzki, standing in for Captain Jack Schmidtman, and he's on the Cutter Resolute today, engaged in a civic leader tour. The Resolute went to Whittier and picked up some civic leaders in Whittier. They made it to the northern, northwestern part of Prince William Sound to give them a first-hand look as to what's going on out there. We have done this in the past, and we do plan to do more in the future. I think this Thursday, weather permitting, they have Chenega Village planned, and they're also looking at some others. So I will cover some of the highlights and additions that we don't have in here. The Coast Guard itself, you'll see, has 262 people. DOD has 458, those being made primarily on the Duluth. And the grand total, when you look at all the federal agencies, of a little over 1,000. Moving on to the key issues. We have heard some discussions about bioremediation. One thing that was not mentioned is in any detail is the concern that is ongoing for possible exposure of the workers. We have had some reports, as you see in the report here, that all 8 of the positive tests, I might add, these tests are taken every day. It's a urinalysis test to see whether you get positive. If you get a positive test, that's not proof positive that it's a reaction or an indication of exposure to Inapol, but as it indicates in our report, these 8 positive tests have been directly related either to previous illness or improper observance of required safety precautions. But the point being is all agencies and Exxon are rechecking their operations to ensure that proper procedures and safety precautions are being followed. On the Corexit, as in Enclosure 1 and 2, you will see to this report, there are addendums of which are the letter from the Federal On-Scene Coordinator to Exxon authorizing the additional tests and outlining the restrictions, and also there's a letter from the Alaska Regional Response Team about the same subject. And on the incinerator barge, as you just mentioned, the one at Fakota Bay, Does have additional repairs, so it will not be completed by 30 August, as stated in here, but rather on Sunday. On the fishing areas, one thing we've been concerned with, I think the last 2 weeks you've heard this particular report, the visual observation indicated that what we saw in the water in many of the areas up in the northern part of Prince William Sound was a refined product rather than a North Slope crude. So we've had an observation, surveillance, enforcement action ongoing with ourselves, NOAA, state agencies, including the Fish and Game and ADEC, to try to get a better handle on what it was. Samples were taken, and those particular samples were traced to and analyzed as diesel. We also have trained observers in the aircraft who, because of their background and experience, can tell fairly accurately what type of product you have, and generally this has been, I think with two minor exceptions, in this part of the sound in the past week, the sheens have been due to refined product diesel, which we presume is coming from the vessels themselves. Weather, as we heard here in today in the Valdez, it was overcast, but if you went out in Prince William Sound this afternoon, it was beautiful. Sea otters, all of the adult otters that can be released have been released, and I don't know if you have any Fish and Wildlife Service. I think, okay.
There's three more to be released.
Three more?
Yeah, we thought they were all gone, but they're not. They're still three.
And what about the pups? I think there were 12 pups.
Those are going to be transported up to Anchorage. We want to fly those up there, and then from there they're going to go be taken out.
And
it should be done by next Tuesday.
And those 14 will be going to zoos or
zoos,
and they cannot be released into the wild. So, okay.
Have we picked up any additional otters recently in the last 2 weeks?
One about 2 weeks ago, and we're trying to get that one on autopsy. In fact, I've got him close here. We did send our trailer over today. It went up to the Anchorage. We kept it there. That frozen otter is here in town. We're going to try to get him to zoo as soon as we can. Have the vet look at it to see what caused the death. That animal had no oil on the fur at all. We just don't know what happened there. Just dead when it was brought in.
I guess these are just like the rest of us. They die occasionally, eh?
And on Section 3 on visitors, did find out this morning there's a possibility of the House Public Works Committee maybe visiting middle of the month. They did have a trip initially scheduled in June, but because of a House vote, they had to cancel that trip, and we anticipate that they may be coming. Also, as one of your enclosures, you will see the Federal On-Scene Coordinator's response to Exxon regarding their Alaska winter program. And are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
You mentioned a test results on use of Interpol fertilizer. As you know, last week I tried to put that issue in perspective from the health risk standpoint, and I was disappointed to see that the resulting press coverage we got from what was discussed here seemed to be intentionally designed to unnecessarily concern people, in spite of what was said. And what instigated that was a note in ADAC's daily report last Tuesday that said as a result of testing and sewered of workers that the U.S. Coast Guard required that now all workers applying Interpol wear respirators. I got a call from Ron Biggers the following day, who's with the Alaska Department of Labor, who had followed up on that statement since he feels that worker protection is more in his purview than the Coast Guard's in this instance. And he said he did talk to the Coast Guard rep in Seward, and the Coast Guard rep said he was misquoted in ADEC's notes, that he did not require people to wear respirators. They're optional. They're not necessary to protect health. And the test that you referred to, as I said last week, Interpol is not a extremely risky or dangerous substance. It's pretty common to a number of commercial products. It is necessary in order to absolutely protect people to make sure that it isn't absorbed through the skin in great quantities. That's the reason that we have them wear the protective rain suits, boots, and gloves. As long as that's done, there's not a problem. And our experience has proved that it indeed is not a problem. To make absolutely sure, though, that people aren't exposed to long-term risk, we do have dipstick, if you will, urine test daily. If they show up positive, it doesn't mean that anyone's health has been impacted, certainly not over the long term. Most of the cases show up positive as a result of some prior health problem, such as a bladder infection. Because there are a number of things that can make the test show positive. One of those would be absorption of the Enopol agent through the skin. All we do then is to retest to make sure that it was an accurate test and wait until it clears up, which usually takes about a day. That ensures that nobody's exposed to Enopol absorption over a long period of time, which could possibly have adverse health impact. So it's just another protective step to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to protect the safety and health of our people, not that Enopol is dangerous to people's health. And so far, the only one test out of way over 1,000 I'm aware of was directly related to Enopol exposure, cleared up within one day, and the person went back applying Enopol again. Should someone show up positive 3 times, we no longer let them work applying Enopol because they're not following the right protective equipment procedures. So again, there's not a health risk here of any significance. We should not concern people because as a result of last week, we have a lot of people unduly concerned about Enopol in our workforce. I sure hope we can clear it up this week.
Good. I think that ought to be pretty clearly stated. Noah?
My name is Sharon Christopherson. I'm with NOAA. I'm standing in for Dave Kennedy today, who's the scientific support coordinator. He asked me if I would give sort of a status report on the fishery subsistence studies that have been going on with the Oil Spill Health Task Force. Primarily, there was a meeting on August 9th, and a couple of things came out of that meeting in Anchorage. One was they reviewed the results of an FDA review of the ADF&G subsistence sampling that was done in May as part of the pilot study. And basically the bottom line of that study was that...
She's giving me a dirty look.
The basic line of that pilot study was that of the 13 samples taken, 11 of them were deemed to be safe for consumption. And there were 2 questionable ones, and of those, they were the only 2 that were identified by the natives who did the collections as being oiled. So they were visibly oiled, whereas the ones who came up and were considered safe for consumption showed no signs of oiling. That was just an initial study. In addition, there's been a sampling done by a number of groups. Dames and Moore and NOAA have been doing sampling from Prince William Sound, Lower Cook Inlet, in Kodiak, and those samples have been shipped to the National Marine Fisheries Laboratory in Seattle, Washington. One of the things that came out of the August 9th meeting of the task force was how they were going to handle and review and come up with some kind of evaluation of that data. That chemical data will be presented to a group of 10 government and industry toxicologist experts that will be meeting in Seattle, Washington on September 14th. That group will then review that data and make their evaluation as to the health effect of it. This information will then be provided back to the task force, who will disseminate the information to the villages and the native subsistence users through the state health departments, the native health organizations, the area native health service, and the Indian health service. Hopefully that information will be available fairly rapidly after the toxicologist experts have had a chance to review the data. Sampling will continue on. This will be the first round of evaluations. So that's sort of a status report of where we are on the subsistence fisheries issue. Any questions?
Thanks, Sharon. Who have I missed? No one.
I forgot to ask. Sharon just reminded me of something I was curious about today. I know there's been a lot of sampling and testing done on water quality and biology. It occurred to us today we hadn't seen any results from ADEC in a long, long time. And we're just curious where that stands. I don't know if you know, Bob.
I can find out.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the steering committee briefing of the Federal On-Scene Coordinator, which is, once again, Admiral, Vice Admiral Clyde Robbins. He's back with us. We have a lot of information that we've just received. This happens once a week. We invite you back every Tuesday night. It begins at 7 o'clock. I'm Sue Rapley. This is KCHU Valdez Cordova. Now going off its remote and back to the studio for some more music.
Thank you very much.